all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800.
We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Army Colonel Michael Mamet, retired. Mike, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, I'm glad to be here.
Well, this is going to be an interesting conversation. I don't know that I've had an author on before who wrote military sci-fi, so I think you're going to be able to set the tone for the whole genre here on Veterans Radio. Big challenge. You up for
it? I'm up to it.
All right.
Let's see what we can do.
Well, before we get into that, let's start out with where'd you grow up? And I know you're a graduate of West Point. How'd you get yourself into West Point and why?
So I grew up in New Hampshire, up in the Northeast. And I was in high school, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. I think a lot of young men probably and women probably do at that, you know, around that time. I took the SAT for the first time as a junior, and I did really well on it. And I was standing in my guidance counselor's office, and he said, you know, with your scores, you might be able to get into one of the military academies, and then you could go to college for free. I'm like, oh, that's great. What are those? And this was, you know, pre-internet days, so I didn't really have any good way to look it up. But I kind of decided that I wanted to do that. I had already been pursuing an ROTC scholarship. I was really looking for ways to pay for college. And I'm not going to lie to you. You know, I think the romantic version is I wanted to serve my country. I really wasn't thinking about that at the time. You know, I was 16. My family didn't have a whole lot of money for college, and I was really trying to figure out a way to go to college. So I applied to West Point. I ended up in my congressman's office interviewing, and, you know, I got in.
And there wasn't a great background or family background of military service, so this was all kind of new to you, it sounds like.
It was quite new. My dad was enlisted in the Navy for 4 years, but that was before I was born. So I had really no background. My grandfather served in World War II. Again, that was also before I was born. So, while my family has served, my brother ended up in the Army. We've definitely served, but it was not part of our family heritage, really.
Well, you certainly jumped into one of the hardest programs to get a free college out of. Tell us about your time at the United States Military Academy, West Point.
Yeah. I showed up really not knowing what to expect. And I got there, and a lot of people did know what to expect. There are guys who prepare for their entire high school lives for this. And I kind of jumped in at the last minute. So I was a little behind. But I think something that people don't understand about West Point is that the academics really make a big difference too. And in the academics, I was probably ahead of a lot of my peers. You know, I was a top third kind of student there. So I didn't have to worry about that part of it. The military part of it came pretty hard to me. And I really went through West Point planning on, doing five. You know, so you owe, when you go to West Point, you owe 5 years to the Army. And when I was at West Point, that was really my plan. My plan was, okay, here's what I owe. I'm going to get in the Army, and I'm going to do 5 years, and then I'll get out and do something else. But it wasn't really till I got in the Army and realized that I really liked doing what I was doing. You know, I didn't love West Point, not going to lie, but I loved the Army. So once I got in, there was really no point where I was getting out.
So you obviously made a career out of it and loved it doing it with 27 years in and ending up as retiring as a full colonel. Tell us a little bit about your assignments, which I understand took you through such prestigious locations as Somalia, Iraq, and Afghanistan.
Yeah, if there's a bad spot that the Army went to, I managed to get there.
Once again, proving that you're in that top third group of really really smart guys who can't get away from it, right?
Yeah, well, some of it's just luck, you know. I ended up in Somalia, really. So that was really my first, you know, major. Well, I was in Desert Storm as well. So coming out of West Point, I was going to what was then the 24th Infantry Division, which is now 3ID, Fort Stewart. And I picked that because, you know, it's in Savannah. And who wouldn't want to go to Savannah? That's where I live now. You know, so that was really why I picked it, is for the location. And while I was at OBC, the Gulf War started. So it wasn't going, the Gulf War was not going on while I you know, when I graduated. I got to OBC at Fort Sill. I was an artillery officer. I got to OBC there, and, you know, the war started, and lo and behold, the 24th ID was deploying to the war. So I paid a lot of attention at OBC, you know, because when you know you're deploying coming out of school, it puts a little bit different light on that. And I did. I got to Fort Stewart on the 2nd of January of 1991, and I was over in Saudi Arabia, you know, a couple weeks after that. And it kind of went from there. I stayed as an artillery officer my entire career, 27 years, commanded a battalion. I did three tours in Iraq with Iraqi Freedom. I did a tour in Afghanistan as a colonel, as a targeting officer for the 4th Infantry Division. A couple tours in Germany, you know, really, really, really kind of made my way around. Heavy. I was a heavy guy most of my career.
And tell us about your last assignment.
Okay, so my last assignment was really kind of unique. I was over in Afghanistan in 2014, and my wife had relocated, and we were stationed at a Fort Carson, and I was with the 4th Infantry Division, and my son had just graduated high school, and my wife, while I was deployed, moved back to Savannah to be with her family, because her mom was not doing real well, and she wanted to be near her family. So she moved back to Savannah, and I went to Afghanistan for a year. While I was there, you know, as it happens, assignments come up, and I said, hey, I'd really like to just get as close to Savannah as I can, because my wife really wanted to stay. She didn't want to leave Savannah, you know, and my boss, General LaCamera, was on board with helping me, you know, get something, because I really didn't have to take that tour. You know, I had three full 1 year tours, combat tours under my belt at that point. You know, he asked me to go with him, and I said yes. So he was really trying to help me out and get an assignment. So they tried to get me as close to Fort Stewart as they could. And it turns out the closest thing we could get was Fort Jackson in Columbia, which is about Columbia, South Carolina, which is about 3 hours up the road. And I took a TRADOC job, what was then called, I don't even remember what it was called, but I was really the commandant of the Army Fitness School, the Army Resilience School, and then the TRADOC Leader School. So, you know, kind of running those schoolhouses. And while I was there, they turned that into a brigade. It became what's called the Leader Training Brigade. It's still there at Fort Carson. So I was the very first commander of the Leader Training Brigade, kind of by default, because I was already there. And that was really my last assignment.
Well,
and
it's actually, away from my wife. Yeah, it's really an interesting, you know, turn of events. And so many times I think people think everything's a straight line in life, and it just isn't. You took a tour to last tour into Afghanistan, which gave you this opportunity that kind of didn't really exist, and it became something much bigger. Put you in a training mode. And today you're teaching and writing, so, you know, one thing doesn't necessarily directly lead to the next, but it probably had some impact on your what you're doing now post military service.
Oh, it had a huge impact. Being there, so what was happening, I was at Fort Jackson, and my wife was still living in Savannah, So we were 3 hours apart. I was driving home most weekends, but during the week, I was living by myself in an apartment. So I'd come home from work. It was trade-off, you know, so I was coming home at six. You know, most nights I was home by six. We weren't doing a lot of field time. I wasn't deploying. So every night from six, you know, until I went to bed, I had writing time. And I started writing. You know, I wrote some novels. And it just kind of spiraled and went up from there.
Why did a military officer, an artillery officer, have the bug or even the thought, hey, I can write something other people want to read?
That really started at West Point. I was in college, you know, and I was reading new books for the first time, really, you know, broadening my horizons educationally. And I called my mom. I was probably 18 or 19 at the time. And I called my mom one day, I think, and said, hey, you know, I want to be a writer. And then I promptly didn't do anything about it for 25 years. But I think I always kind of wanted to do that. And then all of a sudden I had the time.
And one of those other things that I think your writing career and your military career, again, maybe at the time the lines didn't intersect, but you had the opportunity through that 27-year career to meet and work with a lot of really good generals, really good leaders. That's now found its way into your writing. Tell us a little bit about those leaders you worked with through your military career, and tell us how that makes its way into your writing.
Yeah, well, not just leaders, but subordinates too, right? Soldiers are awesome. You know, the only part of the Army I miss is the people. Like, I don't miss getting up at, you know, 5:30 for PT every morning. You know, I don't miss going to the field and humping around, but I miss the people in the Army of all ranks. They're just great. And there's from so many different places and there's so many different experiences. And if there's one thing that I do in my novels is I try to capture that, you know, when someone who served reads my novel, I want them to read it and say, oh, I know that guy, you know, and my characters are not based on anyone specific, but I think that people who served, especially who served in the Army, will recognize some of these guys, you know, by prototype or just like, oh man, I knew somebody just like that. And when people tell me that, it just makes me so proud. Cause that's like my favorite, you know, my favorite reaction to my books is when a veteran reads it and tells me I got it right. You know, this means so much to me because it's important to me to capture that. But yeah, the leadership stuff, the leader lessons, there's lessons in the book. I mean, I'm not writing a book about lessons, but yeah, there's leadership in the book. I mean, my character in the book is a colonel. Okay. You know, so I was kind of writing some of that from experience. He's not me, you know, but he's had some of the same experiences that I've had. So I think I can make when he's talking about stuff, I can make it real. You know, because I pull from real situations a little bit. Planet Side really is kind of based on Afghanistan just a little bit. And what I found from people, you know, it's military science fiction. And some people get hung up on like, oh, I don't like science fiction. Well, do you like the military? Because I'm telling you, it feels more military than science fiction.
So talk to us about why you went into the military science fiction genre as a writer, as compared to just sort of military action as the general genre.
There's a couple reasons. One, I've always loved science fiction. Okay, I've always been a science fiction reader myself, so I really love it. Some of the greats of military science fiction, there's a guy named Joe Halderman who wrote a book called The Forever War, which is basically an allegory for Vietnam. And he was a Vietnam veteran. Okay, he came back from Vietnam and he wrote this book called The Forever War, which is, in my mind, one of the greatest military science fiction books of all time. And it you know, and he wrote it in the 70s, right after Vietnam. And I read that, you know, and then you got Jack Campbell, who's a retired Navy officer, and he wrote a lot of, he writes like naval science fiction. you know, when he served during the Cold War, and there's a lot of the Cold War elements are in his work. So there's this great tradition of military people coming out and kind of capturing their experience, but capturing it in a different genre.
And it gives you a little more freedom, doesn't it? Because you're not sort of locked into trying to match up everybody's view of when I was there.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. That's, you got that going for you, right? So you don't have people sharpshooting you on, oh, that's not what it's like, because, you know, I have settled on another planet, so I can kind of do what I want. It lets me play a little bit with technology. You know, my technology won't look that out of line to military people who have served recently. I don't do a lot of laser beams and stuff like that. I do a lot of projectile weapons and things that people will recognize. But it lets me make up my own stuff, and so I don't have to use the classified stuff that I know about that I can't talk about.
Exactly. Veteran radio listeners, we're talking to Michael Mame, who is the retired Army colonel. He's the author of Planet Side and Up, which was released last year and to be released here this month, Space Side. Mike, let me back you up a little bit. I know you're currently teaching, I believe it's high school kids, American literature. That's probably harder than half your Army jobs. But tell us a little bit about the process to get that first book out the door. How did you actually pull off being a first-time author and now on the heels of, you know, less than a year having the second book coming out?
Yeah, that's a challenge. It's really, really hard to break in, you know, especially, so I'm with Harper Voyager, so it's a big publisher. And it's not an easy process. In order to get to those publishers, you've got to find an agent first. And to find an agent, my agent probably reads 1,000 pitches for every one that she takes on. You know, and she's phenomenal. Lisa Rogers is my agent with Jabberwocky Literary. And I just queried her. I went through a contest called Pitch Wars, where, you know, you pitch your book and you work with an established author. And I got paired up with a guy named Dan Cobalt, who was an author. He's a science fiction and fantasy author. You know, and he kind of coached me through it. And I basically pitched my book to Lisa, and she wanted to represent it. And it just kind of took off from there. We signed a 2-book deal, which is kind of how the second book happened. We signed a 2-book deal for Planet Side and Space Side at the same time. We have announced the next deal. So Planet Side has done really well. A lot of people have enjoyed it. It's really sold more copies than the publisher expected it to, I think. Which is great, because they offered me a new deal, and we're going to, you know, I'm working on the third book right now.
So put a little more depth and color around this. Did you find your agent, the first person you asked to be your agent, said, oh, heck yes, I want to be the agent?
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, that it's a very long and drawn out process. So I started, you do what's called querying. Okay, so you send out query letters to agents who represent the types of things that you write. And I queried 32 agents total. And two of them out of those 32, about 5 months later, two of them offered to represent me. And then I had to choose between the two, which I did. It's a really long, we could talk about that all day. If you're really, really interested in that, there's a whole bunch of writer podcasts and stuff that'll tell you all about the querying process and how you go about being an author. But it's really elaborate.
We will always want to make sure that our veteran radio listeners and our veterans in particular are listening, understand how much effort it went into to get to this point, how much rejection might have occurred, and not just think, well, everybody just did it in one shot, and I didn't do it on my first shot, so I'm going to go back and sit on the couch. It doesn't work that in the way in the military, and it doesn't work that way in real life, does it?
Oh, absolutely not. For writing, I have friends who wrote who got picked up with agents and sold books like on their seventh or eighth book. They got rejected 5, 6, 7 times before they made it. I was a little more fortunate than that. I have a book that I queried before Planet Side that did not go anywhere, did not get an agent, got rejected on that. So Planet Side was actually the second book that I wrote. I learned a lot writing the first book wasn't very good, just being honest. I learned a lot from it, though, and kind of it was one of those things where, as a military guy, I think you go back and you do the after action review. I think, that's kind of built into our wiring. You figure out where it went wrong, what you did wrong, what you need to know to do it better the next time. And I did that, and I applied it to Planet Side, which was my second novel, which it's my first novel to be published, but it's the second book that I wrote.
Michael, give us a little snapshot of what Planet Side is about to maybe intrigue and entice our listeners, and then the same for Space Side.
Okay, Planet Side is about a colonel who's kind of at the end of his career. He's kind of in a, he's a well-decorated guy. He's been there. He's done that. But he's kind of running out the last days of his career, waiting to retire. And he gets a call from a general he used to know, asking him to take on one last mission. And the mission is very, very high visibility because a senator's kid has disappeared in a war zone. So this senator's family has a long history of serving. That's their tradition. Everybody in their family serves. So the senator served and his son served and the kid goes missing. And it's a sketchy situation. There's not a lot of details behind it. And, there's this idea that maybe someone's covering something up and the senator's not real happy about that. So they send this guy, Carl Butler, out there to this war zone to try to find the kid or find out what happened. And so it's kind of based on real situations where something happens bad in a war zone. We'll send somebody in there to kind of check out what's going on. I didn't have any specific case in mind, but I think we could all probably find a couple and point to them. So he kind of goes in there to do an investigation. He expects it to be pretty easy. The guy died in combat. So he expects it to be pretty easy. He gets out there and something's wrong. Okay. People are lying to him. One of his witnesses disappears. There's computer information that's missing from the system. The records, the flight records for that day have been deleted. And he starts to realize that there's more here than meets the eye. And that's kind of where this story goes.
Good tease. Tell us about, do the same for us on your upcoming novel that's going to be published, Space Side.
Okay, well, Space Side, it's harder. This is harder to do because I can't tell you too much about Space Side without spoiling a lot of Planet Side, and Planet Side's a mystery, so I don't want to give away too many secrets. But Space Side, really, it takes place 2 years after Planet Side. It's the same main character, and to sum up Planet Side, at the ending of Planet Side, big things happen. Okay, big events happen around this. He there's some notoriety. It's galaxy-wide, worldwide, known what happens. So at the beginning of Space Side, you kind of have the fallout from that. Because just think, think if something big happened in Afghanistan tomorrow, and it was huge. It would be all over the news. People would be talking about it. If it was about a certain person, we'd probably get to know that person's name. They'd kind of become a media figure. And that's kind of what's happened to our colonel at the beginning of Space Side. And then it just kind of goes from there.
And you have indicated that you've got a new contract to write. Is it another two books? And will they follow on with the Planet Side, Space Side saga?
Well, it's two books, but the first book will follow on with that saga. The book after that, we're still talking about that. That's a ways away. That wouldn't be till 2021. So we're still kind of talking about the fourth book. But the third book is definitely in the same series. So it's the same main character. Space Side really, really wraps up a two book arc. Planet Side stands alone. But Space Side kind of continues from Planet Side. The book that follows, it doesn't have a title yet. I'm calling it Planet Side 3 right now in my head. And in that book, it's really, imagine a new season of a show, you know, where everything wrapped up at the beginning of the new season of the last season. But all the characters are going to come back for a new adventure. So that's kind of book three.
Michael, tell our listeners where they may find some more information about you and where they may find information on both of these books and watch for the next one as well.
Yeah, well, Planetside and Spaceside are going to be available anywhere you buy books, anywhere online, Barnes & Noble, Amazon. They'll be Spaceside will certainly be in most bookstores in about 3 weeks when it comes out. It comes out on August 27th, so it'll be in most bookstores, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstores in a lot of cases. So it'll be everywhere. You can find me at michaelmame.com, and there's a whole bunch of information about me and my books there. You know, you can kind of go from there, and there's a whole bunch of links to other stuff. And, you know, I'm on Twitter and Facebook. My name is really, really unique. I think there's only two Michael Mames in America. So if you Google me, you'll probably find me.
And I can attest to it. It really is that easy. M-A-M-M-A-Y, Michael Mame. Colonel, we really appreciate you spending some time today with Veterans Radio, talking to us a little bit about your military service and how and why you got into writing these military sci-fi books. And I think you've probably converted a number of people into giving the genre a try. Good job.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate your time.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Veterans Radio needs you. If you like our shows that are informative, surprising stories, and relevant information on what's happening at the VA and the military, we'd like your support. Individual support of $5 to $50 a month or corporate sponsorship of $1,000 to $10,000 would be welcomed. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsorship or support tab, pay online, and keep Veterans Radio on the air.